Hello and welcome back to 10 Questions. Today's guest is the four-time Logie Award-winning actor, singer and dancer, Hugh Sheridan. Hugh grew up in Adelaide with six brothers and sisters, studied ballet with the Australian Ballet, sang with the State Opera of South Australia, and studied acting at the National Institute of Dramatic Art. Hugh's major break was playing Ben Rafter in the Channel 7 hit Packed to the Rafters, and what followed was the limited series In Excess, Never Tear Us Apart, House Husbands, and Five Bedrooms. Right now, Hugh's in Brisbane launching his new stage show, Hugh Man, which is a mixture of disco and old-school cabaret, while a new series of Packed to the Rafters returns to Amazon Prime. In our chat, we talk about religion, spirituality, and the importance of having a tough Irish Catholic family. By the way, in passing, Hugh mentions their brother Zachary. The context for that was that Zachary was reported missing after the Nepal earthquake of 2015 and was later found unharmed. As usual, I started by asking Hugh when they were most happy.
You know, when you're in like a meditation or something like that, and they say to you, can you go to your happy place? You know what I mean? Or the place where you felt the safest. I always picture myself when I was a toddler, when I was just very, very young, like really young, and I was running across this beach in South Australia on the Fluria Peninsula called Aldinga Beach. And it's a really, well, especially as a child, it's a long distance from the sand to the water. And the sand was so hot. And the bitumen was so hot, and my feet would just be running to get to the water, like racing, and the sand would be whipping my legs. But I was just so excited about getting in that freezing cold water. It was just, that's my happy place. So that I think is my happiest. And that was anywhere from, we started going to that beach when I was born, from the year that I was born till, I mean, I still go there now, but that's my happy place and probably when I felt, I guess, the safest and happiest.
Yeah, right. That's lovely. Who would you like to apologize to and why?
I'm pretty good with apologies. Like I think about, there was an ex I had a while ago who I didn't talked to for a long time, and you know, we both held grudges, and then I realized that the best thing, even though I felt like I was very hard done by, the best thing to do was to actually contact them and say sorry and actually apologize, and on my behalf, and say, I think, you know, I just want to apologize, because if there was ever any time that I made you feel like you were not the most important person in my life, then I'm sorry for that. Even though that person had, you know, turned out they'd been cheating on me the whole time and all this sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
And as soon as I opened the gate and as soon as I said sorry, this was about 2 or 3 years after the fact, they, you know, said sorry straight back and said, I'm so, so sorry as well. I'm really, 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 like, I'm sorry for this and that. And that was... it's very cathartic. I think that forgiveness and sorries should be dealt with. Mm. I think there's times when I look back at my younger self and thought, I wish I knew this or I wish I knew that. So maybe if I was going to apologize to anyone, like when I was younger and I didn't know how to stand up for myself. Mm. But I can't think off the top of my head anyone that I want to, that I haven't said sorry to that I needed to.
That's lovely to apologize to your former self, you know, because it's one does feel like one has let oneself down a couple of times, you know.
Oh, many times. Like, I mean, yeah, just looking back and you think, gosh, I wish I knew that, or I was stronger, I was more confident, or I could have just like held my own hand and said it's going to be okay. Or although if someone's listening and they feel like I owe them an apology, you can always message me and reach out, and I'm so sorry in advance.
Lovely. What is your greatest regret?
Regrets? I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do. I think, I'm like going to be just, this could be the most boring one that you've ever done. But like, no. I feel like even with regrets, I just have so few, because I'm a true believer in that everything happens for a reason and that nothing happens by chance.
Mm.
I had a huge regret years ago for taking a job that I didn't want to take, and it was a job to host this show, and I just didn't want to do it. And in the end, my agents, I was living in New York at the time, my agents, even my American agents said, take this job, because they were offering a lot of money. And they said, basically take the money and run. And it was a hosting thing. And I thought, no, I'm an actor. And there is a point to this story, I think. This was a huge regret, because on my way back to Australia to shoot this show, I stopped in Los Angeles and I auditioned for Dirty Dancing, this remake of the movie by Kenny Ortega. And I landed in Australia. I got put straight back on a plane to go back to LA. And long story short, I got the role, and I had to audition in front of like 50 people, thousands of people auditioned for it. And I landed this amazing job. But because I'd said yes to this job that I didn't want to do for the money, because I was told to do it, and it clashed by 2 weeks. The company that I was working with here threatened to sue Lionsgate in America if I took it. At that point in time, I thought, wow, I've given up my. I knew in my heart that I wasn't supposed to do this job, and yet I did it. And years before, I'd gone to the Australian Ballet School, and I always wondered why. I thought, why did I go to the Australian Ballet School? And I thought, this was it, to play Johnny Castle in Dirty Dancing. Okay. I was finally going to get to use my dancing skills. And I was really, really angry, and I really regretted not trusting my gut. And I really, really just, I was so angry. I was trying very hard to get fired. I was making, like, I was, like, doing... like even leaving my hotel room was looking like crap, like anything. They were like, we're not firing you. You're doing the job, and you have to do it, and you have to live with it. So in the end, I did the job, and I befriended one of the people in the crew, and their dad had a pub, and I met this young kid there working. I say kid, he's probably like 18 or 19. He's working as a carpenter, and he wanted to get into acting. And he said, you know, will you give me a hand? I said, yeah, yeah. So I helped him, and I mentored him, and I was mentoring some other young actors at the time. I put them together, and they went to classes. And then he came to LA, sat on my couch. He was doing really well. And I didn't hear from him for a little while. He moved back to Byron. He met this beautiful Indigenous artist, and she and he had children together. And he is now a film producer. And I've acted in a film for him. He has Bronte Pictures. And he encouraged me about a year ago to write a movie. He said, do you have a movie inside of you that you want to write? And I said, well, I've got this idea for a film. And I ended up writing this film called The Dance, which is about when I went to the Australian Ballet School.
Oh, wow.
And I'm directing that next year. It's going to be my first movie, and he's producing it. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
You put it together now. I thought that I went to the Australian Ballet School to do Dirty Dancing, but actually I didn't do Dirty Dancing because I had to meet this kid.
Yeah.
And now his whole life is about film, and he's actually producing the first movie that I wrote, which happens to be about my time at the ballet school. So therefore I have this thing about regrets where you can't, sometimes life takes a while to show you the reason why things didn't happen. So
it takes a lot of experience to be kind of sanguine about it and just go, oh, well.
Well, it was so funny because I held on to that for a long time. I was regretful, remorseful. I was angry. I felt like my life would have gone this way. And now I was like, oh my goodness. Like I was so wrong. And I didn't trust the fact that there was a different plan for me, and that life had a different plan, and then that my journey was going to be so much better, because in turn I was also going to be helping someone else change their life, which is better, much better, and I'm much happier with that result. I'm excited about the the opportunity to direct. And also at school, I was never a good writer. I was pretty dyslexic actually. And to sort of have written a film and been encouraged by someone who I met when they were pretty low is it's great in itself, like just an achievement on a personal value for my younger self. I'm let down and said, you're a terrible writer. Bugger them, I wrote a movie.
That's right. What would you still need to do to feel you've lived a satisfactory life?
Well, I think I better do the film. I think I've got to. I think, you know, the first opening line of the movie, the dance, there's a message that comes up sort of before the film starts, and it says, this film is dedicated to your 16-year-old self. You are safe. You're okay. The best is yet to come. Trust me. Oh, and that's a message from me to, you know, my 16-year-old self.
That's great.
That's a gift. It's a gift to the generations to come and to many people that probably think, oh, should have done this, should have done that. But could have, should have, would have, didn't.
Were you doing it? Who is the person who most influenced you and how?
The person that most influenced me and how is probably my grandmother, Addie. She was just a beautiful soul. She was very, she loved birds. She would always, like, she saved everything. She was ready for the Depression again. Like, I think she was born in 1910, and her name was Adeline, and she was very humble, very kind. She had converted at a young age from Protestant to Catholic, which if you're of that generation, they often become very devout Catholics. She's a devout Catholic, and she was a beautiful painter, and she did yoga, which I thought was completely normal, but, like, you know, now I realize that was kind of not strange, but it was just, she was just a very unique soul, and she was very kind and very, very caring. And she, even though she was Catholic, I mean, I recall as she got older, she would, you know, she would cry about, like, hating ants. So she was kind of Buddhist as well. She just cared about everything. And her backyard was full of feathers. And not that you can see it very well, but I actually have a white feather tattoo there, which is mirrored by the sort of black feather there, which is sort of for her. I wish you could see it, because I have a few white tattoos, but they don't come up very well. But anyway, there it says Alma Fuerte in her handwriting. Not that she was Spanish or anything, but my mum sort of do her handwriting. And I asked her to write it. Mum said, what does that mean? And I said, it means strong soul. And Mum said, what was it for? And I said, oh, tattoo. That was the first tattoo I ever got. I was 30. And not that I have many, but, you know, Mum was horrified. And I said, well, you know, but when I showed her and it was in her and Gran's handwriting, and I told her what it meant, I said, it's just to remind me that, because, you know, everything comes with the hand, that, you know, our choices, strong soul, you know, be strong and always make the right choice. And, like, that can be from everything, from doing good by people, or, you know, discipline, or doing right by your family or by your partner or by whatever, or by your work, whatever. That's the values that she instilled in me. And I think that came, like, I still went to church when I was I went to Melbourne when I was 16 to the Australian Ballet School, and she died that same year. And I still went to St. Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne 4 times a week. And not because, like, I mean, I grew up a Catholic, but it was because I felt close to her and I missed her so much. And I would light a candle for her every night. I just really, I loved her. And I don't think I realized how much she influenced me until after she passed away and then for years to come. So, you know, I think she had very, very good understanding of the human condition, and I wish that she lived longer, Kurt, just so I could talk to her more. Yeah. But I do talk to her. I talk to her anyway. I named my cat after her.
That's great. When was the last time you cried, and why?
Look, I cry all the time. I'm in touch with my emotions. I feel like watching Pixar films is like watching Schindler's List. Like, I feel like they're the new Sophie's Choice is Pixar, you know, because it just cuts you right to the core. If I watch a movie on an airplane, I'll be in tears. I think, you know, I mean, I've cried a lot recently. Like, my dad passed away 3 months ago. He was a big part of my life. He would have been, you know, probably second to Addie. I was thinking Dad or Addie, because he was a singer, a showman. He was a lot of fun. I mean, I like to go out and have a laugh and be like Dad. He brightened up room, and he was a big showman, you know. He was a singer, but he was just this great guy. And anyway, I miss him all the time, and I still cry about him every other day because I forget that he's not there, and I call him. But weirdly enough, I've had this kookaburra. I'm in the city in Brisbane at the moment, and I have this kookaburra. Today I had two, but this little baby kookaburra has been sleeping on my balcony every night. I don't know where it came, like how it started to come. I wasn't feeding it or anything. But every night it would just come there. I mean, it's everywhere. But it would just appear. And I just had this feeling it was Dad, because I would be sitting out on the balcony sometimes at nighttime looking at the stars, stargazing and thinking of Dad. But I felt like the kookaburra was Dad's way of telling me to laugh. And then today, my sister called and she was crying about Dad, you know, because it just sort of hits you in waves. I don't know if you've lost a parent, but it's one of those things that you don't really prepare for it until it happens. And then when it happens, it sort of takes you by surprise and it comes and goes. And anyway, so she was crying and I said, that's all right, I get it. And I went outside and there were two kookaburras and I said, well, I said, there you go. And they're not usually here in the daytime. I mean, there's usually just one and it comes to sleep at nighttime by itself. But today there were two. They're in the daytime looking at them. And I said, well, there's one for you and one for me. And Dad wants us to laugh.
That's lovely. Yeah. That's lovely. And what is your current state of mind?
Oh, my current state of mind is, it's been a lot of work. I'm trying to be incredibly grateful because I feel like when I'm really busy, I get very creative, and I haven't been this busy for a long time. Where I've sort of had I've got the Brisbane Festival opening. My second show at the Brisbane Festival, was I sort of created this new show for them for the opening, and now I've got my new show, Human, opening on the same night as Back to the Rafters, same day, 17th. So there's a lot going on, and I've just wrapped on this movie up here just wrapped, and I've been doing 17-hour days, some days just going on 2 hours sleep. So my main thing is been just to keep going and to make sure that I do the best that I can to make good choices, but also just to constantly remain grateful. There's this book I have. I wish I'm going to grab it for you right now. I'm going to show it to you. Hold on. I know you can edit it. Yeah, look. There's this book I read at night called Did You Pray? And I read it. Look, see, I must be, I'm still at once you can't record, can't it? It's not actually it's a book that I bought when I was at a retreat in India, and I found this beautiful book. I was staying there and I just love it because it brings me back down to it just goes through everything from did you play for the planet, for the light, the warmth, the air, for where you are in life. Did you pray for the fact, did you remember that you are so lucky to be alive? And did you remember that there's so many people less fortunate than you are? And so I can't complain about work at all, because I live and I work and that's what I want. That's what I wanted and that's what I prayed for. And they always say, how do you make an actor complain? Give them a job.
Yeah.
So I don't, my mindset, that was a very long answer.
No, I love it.
I'm grateful.
Yeah. No, I love it. What do you, question eight is, what do you consider your greatest achievement?
Sobriety.
Yeah.
making it, like getting through it, I think I've overcome, you know, personally, there's been a lot of times in my life where I've had hurdles that have been really challenging for me on a personal level, whether it was like strange situations like my brother being in Nepal or even randomly becoming famous and not intending on any of that ever actually happening. But it's just, I think actually everyone, like your greatest achievement, if you can't, if anyone's ever struggling for their greatest achievement, it's waking up that day, because it takes a lot these days.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a huge amount to be alive at this point in time and coping. And I think so. I mean, I can't say that I've got children or anything like that, but I think just the fact that there have been times in my life where it's been darker than lighter, and how easy it is to just think that you could just have all let it go. But I think actually my greatest achievement is just surviving and keep going.
Yeah, man.
If that makes sense. I hope that's not too dark an answer.
No, it's not. I mean, I understand, you know, once we've kind of survived a life in this industry, if you can survive for a long time, then you've seen everything.
Exactly.
Who would you want on your side in a battle, and why?
Well, obviously you just want your friends and your family, because that, you know, I'd assume. But if I had to narrow it down, I'd say probably my mum, because I sure as hell wouldn't want her on the other side. I just definitely wouldn't want to go up against that one. But also just, all I'd want is just my mates, my friends, my family, because I'd do anything for them and I know that they'd do anything for me. So, and I've got a few, you know, I'm number six of seven kids, but they've got family. And then my friends are all, you know, spectrum. Great, but like, you know, I would go, I've never really been in a battle, actually. I mean, I have gone into battle for people, but not physically, but to sort stuff out. But I have friends that definitely would make up for my lack of physicality in a battle. Like, I wouldn't get into a punch-up. So I'm like, let's be rational. But I've got other friends that would just go straight in, pick up a bottle, smash it, and go, what are you saying? Like,
that's funny.
I've got a sister that's like, you know, like pretty... She's a bit older, but she, like, you know, I wouldn't even want her to misunderstand something. Like, if we were like leaving a footy match and someone called something out to me, or you're beating you after or something like that, I wouldn't even want her to just catch wind of it.
Yeah.
Because if she misunderstood, or even if they did say something offensive, I'd have to be holding her back to save that person's life. So,
it's good
to have that kind of family.
Oh, well, Sheridan, Irish stock?
Irish Catholic.
You go.
Sheridan.
Yeah.
That's right. That's nasty fighting with us. Not today, not anything. Not today, Satan.
It makes sense. the last question is, what would you like your last words to be?
Switch me off. I'm done. I think my last words, what would be really great for my last words to be, was, I've got to tell you something that I've never told anyone ever before.
And cut.
And then out. I loved Oscar Wilde's last words were, either the drapes go or I go. And then he died. And I stayed at that hotel. It's called L'Hotel in Paris. And I stayed in that hotel, and they still have the same space. I wasn't in his room, but they've made a point of keeping the hotel exactly the way it is because it was famous for Oscar Wilde dying there. And he said, either the drapes go or I go. And then he died. My dad's finest last words were always love. And his dad's last words were, the party's over. And maybe given our conversation, my last words should be, no regrets.
Thank you so much for tuning into 10 Questions. We'd also like to thank all the guests that appear on the show. And if you have a minute, please subscribe via iTunes or your podcast app. And leave us a rating. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach me on Twitter at AdamZwa. So until next time, thanks for joining us.